That mines Iran airs the confessions of two French spies admitting to their support for anti-government protests and regime change efforts in Iran. Negative economic data could be tipping the United States toward recession ahead of the pivotal midterm elections, in which the control of Congress will be at stake. And police in Thailand say more than 30 people, most of them children, have been killed in a gun and knife attack. Hello and welcome, everybody. Iran has released a video of two French spies arrested some 4 months ago in which they've admitted to their efforts to incite chaos and unrest in the country. One of the spies has admitted to being an agent at the French Foreign Intelligence Agency known as the General Directorate for External Security. She proceeds to explain how they brought in large sums of cash in order to fund riots and strikes, as well as purchase weaponry in an attempt to stir up chaos. She also states that their main aim was to lay the groundwork for mass unrest and trigger a revolution in Iran. The Iranian Ministry of Intelligence announced their arrest in late May. The ministry stated that they had entered the country with the aim of hijacking peaceful rallies to create social disorder. Elsewhere, British police have released images of anti-Iran protesters who were present at a violent riot outside Iran's London embassy, which saw police officers wounded and the building vandalized. The manhunt, Robert Carter, highlights the continued threat Western-based anti-Iran dissident groups pose on Britain's streets.
British police have released images of individuals they want to identify in connection with the recent anti-Iran riots opposite Iran's embassy in London. The London Metropolitan Police have already admitted that five officers were seriously injured during clashes with demonstrators on September the 25th. The protesters claimed to support Iranian woman Marza Amini, who collapsed at a police station in Tehran on September the 16th. A spokesperson for the Met said,
"We won't tolerate members of the public or officers who are doing all they can to maintain and regain order being injured in any circumstances. And we are now doing everything we can to make sure those who committed the violent offences are brought to justice."
Police are now guarding the embassy and consulate building, but other sites remain fearful of future attacks too. The Islamic Centre of England in Maidvale was also targeted in the recent riots.
There's been so many cases where these so-called Iranians, these, you know, pro-Iranians have come and they've ripped off women's hijabs and they've beat up little girls and they've smashed in people's heads. It's just ridiculous.
The recent protests saw a hodgepodge of rival ideologies and dissident groups banding together. Many of these groups have a history of conducting violent attacks against Iranian expats living in the West. We witnessed supporters of the anti-Iran terrorist group, the MKO, and former Shah dictatorship supporters verbally and physically assaulting Iranians attempting to vote in London back in June 2021.
I heard a rock hit the ground. I didn't look back because I was shaking at that time as well. And it hit my trainer, a bit of it. And then they're calling names. One of them said to me, funnily enough, the policeman was there, but obviously you couldn't understand Farsi. He's telling me if I had a knife, I would cut you in pieces right here, right now.
Calm has returned to London streets for the time being. However, many of the dissident groups which took part in the recent riots remain active and at large, acting as opportunists, willing to jump on any opportunity to harass ordinary Iranian expats and seemingly anyone else who stands in their way. Robert Carter, London.
Iran is calling for the Caspian literal states to create an oil and gas cooperation committee. First Vice President Mohammad Mokhber gave the proposal during the second meeting of the Caspian Economic Forum in Moscow. The Iranian official said the Caspian Sea is a mutual heritage and a connection hub among its littoral states. He said countries bordering the sea need to expand cooperation in various fields. The forum, initiated in 2018, is meant to act as a platform to discuss economic cooperation, transport, and security in the region. Representatives from Russia, Turkmenistan, Kazakhstan, Azerbaijan, and Iran have attended the event. U.S. Special Forces have reportedly carried out an operation in a government-held village in northeast Syria, killing a civilian and taking away a few others. According to the Syrian state TV, the operation took place in an area of Hasaka province, which is partly held by government forces and partly by U.S.-backed Kurdish fighters. According to locals, American helicopters landed in the village after midnight and told residents by loudspeaker to stay indoors and keep their lights off. The operation reportedly lasted several hours, and there was no exchange of fire with the American troops. U.S. forces have been in Syria for years under the pretext of combating terrorists, but Syria says a presence is illegal and fuels insecurity. Well, the U.S. Negative economic data continues to pile up. 5 weeks into the midterms, a record plunge in the number of job openings has many declaring that the country is officially in recession. Rami Mazuri has more from Chicago.
New jobs data in the United States showed a collapse of 1.1 million job openings, the biggest one-month crash ever outside of the COVID lockdown. It's also the first increase in the unemployment rate since April 2020, and that has many so-called recession deniers being forced to reconsider. The United States has had two consecutive quarters of negative economic growth, which is the standard definition of economic recession. However, in an effort to avoid the negative press the recession label receives, the administration of President Joe Biden claimed that a stable unemployment rate meant that the U.S. was not in a recession. That's no longer possible. Due to the so-called Uberization of the United States economy, the official data has long been accused of falsely portraying a rosy picture. The national unemployment rate is 4%, but many say the jobs available are part-time or lack crucial benefits like health care or are poorly paid despite the current record inflation.
People looking for benefits, they want to work from home. People are not settling like they used to. It's just a matter of, I don't want to say laziness, but I think people are just, they're trying to get the best that they want, and companies are trying to hold steady and their wages, and they're not willing to pay as much because costs are going up for them as well.
Amid the backfiring of Western sanctions on Russia, many businesses have responded by cutting job listings, slowing the hiring process, and may begin mass layoffs.
Now we've got the threat of recession, so some employers are cutting back on their hiring. My son-in-law just had to fire several people he had who were hiring people, so they're cutting back on their hiring process based on a precautionary measure, thinking there might be a recession.
The widespread perception is that America's central bank is forcing a recession to reduce inflation, even if that means throwing millions out of work, out of their homes, and guts pensions, which are usually based on the stock market. The drop in jobs is the latest piece of data which shows a dangerously worsening economic situation for the average American. Wages are losing ground to inflation at a record pace, and an economically chaotic October could translate into a painful holiday season for many. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
Tragedy in Thailand. An assailant has killed at least 35 people and injured others in an attack on a children's daycare center. The shooting happened in the province of Nongbua Lamphu. The former police officer was agitated after not being able to find his kid at the nursery. He then attacked the people at the place with a gun and knife, taking the lives of at least 22 children aged under 3 years. Later, he drove home and killed his wife and child before turning his weapon on himself. He had just attended a court hearing on a drug charge prior to the incident. Thailand's prime minister has called the tragedy horrifying and ordered a thorough investigation. South Korea and Japan say the North has fired two short-range ballistic missiles amid escalating tensions on the Korean Peninsula. According to the South Korean military, the missiles were fired from Pyongyang toward the country's east coast and in the direction of Japan. This is North Korea's sixth missile launch in 12 days and the first since it fired an intermediate-range missile over Japan. North Korea's foreign ministry on Thursday said recent missile launches were, quote, counteraction measures against joint military drills by the U.S. and South Korea. It added that the joint drills escalate military tensions on the Korean Peninsula. Pyongyang considers such moves as rehearsals for an invasion. It accuses the U.S. and its regional allies of threatening it with war games and military buildup. Well, here's our correspondent Jennifer Chang in Seoul shedding more light on the fresh missile launches by North Korea. Let's listen in.
And experts say North Korea will conduct many more weapons tests in the coming months in order to complete this current round of modernization. And after that, it is expected to want to deal with North Korea as a nuclear power that does not have to follow the dictates of the U.S.-led international UN. Now, the UN Security Council has been having problems being led by the U.S. No longer will Russia and China go along with the U.S.'s request that it sanction the North over ballistic missile tests. After this latest intermediate range ballistic missile, which is being seen as a huge provocation by the U.S., China and Russia both blamed the U.S. for that IRBM test over Japan and refused to vote in favor of more sanctions against the North. So right now, the North is really having no limit to its modernization of its nuclear weapons or missile programs.
Turning now to the latest developments in the Ukraine war, President Volodymyr Zelensky says his forces have retaken some areas in the southern Kherson region from Russian troops. According to Zelensky, three settlements near the city of Kherson have been liberated. The advances were made after the latest maps revealed by Moscow showed Russian troops had left many areas in Kherson and the northeastern Kharkiv region. Kiev launched a counteroffensive in the beginning of September and says it has so far taken back thousands of square kilometers of Russian-controlled territory. That includes the strategic town of Liman in the eastern Donetsk region, which was a logistics and transport hub for Moscow's operations. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov has said the areas recaptured by Kiev will eventually return to Russia. Meanwhile, the UN General Assembly is preparing to hold a vote on Russia's recent annexation of four Ukrainian regions. After weeks of speculation over the assassination of Russian journalist Daria Dugina, here's what appears to be confirmation from American intelligence services about who did it. According to the New York Times, American officials believe the Ukrainian government, in fact, gave the green light to the car bomb attack near Moscow that killed Dugina in August. The paper has quoted unnamed officials as saying that the United States had no role in the assassination, but that it did scold Ukraine over the attack. Since the beginning of the war in Ukraine, Washington and Kiev have been sharing intelligence. The U.S. had also imposed sanctions on Dugina just a day after her murder. Russia laid the blame on Ukrainian intelligence services, but Kiev has denied involvement in the killing. It is widely believed that her father, Alexander Dugin, was the primary target. He's a prominent Russian nationalist and a supporter of the war in Ukraine. Soaring energy prices in Italy continue to bite. The Italian Retailers Association has announced that hundreds of thousands of firms are at the risk of closure next year as recession looms on the country's economic horizon.
On Wednesday, Italy's largest retailers association, Confcommercio, warned that over 120,000 small businesses risk shutting down in the first half of 2023. The association said firms are squeezed by the cost of living and skyrocketing energy prices. The president of Confcommercio, Carlo Sangalli, urged the government to do more to shield small and medium entrepreneurs, as the situation for many is now very critical.
There is the risk of a high number of business closures in the coming 9 months. Some small firms will simply find it more convenient to suspend their activity rather than losing 200 to 300 euros a day. Having said that, Italy will soon face a mild recession, which frankly is not as worrying as the media depict it.
Last month, Italy's outgoing government approved an aid package worth some 14 billion euros in an attempt to shield firms and families from surging energy costs. The measure came on top of over 50 billion euros already budgeted since January to soften the energy crisis in the country. However, the aid seems to be insufficient as an increasing number of businesses are struggling to stay afloat.
Everything costs at least 20% more. Energy prices keep soaring and it is very hard to keep going. We need help. The government must do something.
I cannot afford paying expenses for my family. I have four dependent children. They're all unemployed. Bills keep going up. How do we cope?
According to Confcommercio, more than 370,000 jobs are at risk as a result of the energy crisis. Meanwhile, energy giant Eni announced that gas supplies to Italy from Russia have resumed after 4 days. Russia's state-controlled Gazprom cut off gas supplies to Italy on Saturday, citing a problem linked to regulatory changes in Austria. Italy's national energy regulator, ARERA, warned last week that prices would climb by almost 60% by the end of the year, but experts argue that its estimate was optimistic. Bills have risen by 93% in Italy over the past 2 years, and the conflict between Russia and Ukraine, together with the damage recently sustained by Nord Stream pipelines, is likely to push costs even higher. Max Civili, Rome.
That's it with the world news for now. Bye, everybody.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Germany is expecting its worst economic crisis in 70 years. In a report by Der Spiegel news magazine published recently, high inflation, rising energy prices, and a slowing economy are counted as Germany's recent crises have worsened after Russia began an special military operation in Ukraine in February. Latest surveys show that Germans are deeply worried about the energy crisis and rising inflation more than the crisis in Ukraine. In this regard, we have taken a look at some world press and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned, please. Financial Times Daily wrote, German inflation soared to double-digit levels for the first time in more than 70 years, underlining the precarious state of Europe's largest economy, which leading economists warned could shrink by up to 7.9% next year in a worst-case scenario. Chancellor Olaf Scholz responded to soaring energy costs on Thursday, September 29th, by announcing plans for a 200 billion euros cap on gas prices, which he described as a defensive shield to be financed by extending an off-balance sheet fund set up to provide aid during the coronavirus pandemic. According to a flash estimate published by the Federal Statistical Energy on Thursday, consumer prices in Germany rose 10.9% in the year to September, accelerating from 8.8% in August. It is the first time German inflation has reached double-digit levels since 1951, and the increase is expected to lift overall Eurozone inflation to a new record of 9.7% when those figures were released on Friday, September 30. Carsten Brzezinski, an economist at Deutsche Bank ING, said inflation is running red hot in Germany, adding that it was hard to see how the European Central Bank could not raise interest rates by 0.75 percentage points for a third consecutive time at next month's meeting. The increase in German prices, which rose 2.2% month on month, was driven by the expiry of temporary measures to shield households and businesses from the impact of high prices, such as a fuel duty cut and a subsidized 9 euros monthly train ticket. Energy prices rose 43.9% in the year to September, accelerating from 35.6% growth in August, while food prices surged 18.7% against 16.6% a month earlier. Services price growth accelerated to 3.6% from 2.2%. Russia's decision to cut gas supplies to Europe after its military operation in Ukraine has plunged Germany into its worst energy crisis since the Second World War. Soaring gas prices have forced many companies to reduce production or even shut down entirely, while private households are preparing for a huge increase in heating bills. Anadolu news agency explains more about the story, saying more and more Germans are seeking help from food banks and charities due to record high inflation and soaring energy bills. According to the Federal Food Bank umbrella organization TAFL Deutschland, demand has increased compared to the previous year, with more than 2 million people now relying on food donations, visiting food banks and local charities. Heike Bench, a 41-year-old mother of five children, is among those receiving help from a local charity in Berlin. Bench said that although she has a job, she's struggling to pay the bills. She told Anadolu news agency, "I work as a cleaner for 4 hours a day, but it's hard to make ends meet because everything is getting more expensive. You can see it in the food prices." The current energy crisis in Germany and skyrocketing bills have made life more difficult for lower-income households. Russian special operation in Ukraine, consequent Western sanctions against Kremlin, and growing tensions between European countries and Moscow have pushed energy prices higher. According to estimates, households will have to pay around 3,500 euros for gas this winter, nearly three times what they paid last year. Bench expressed frustration with the German coalition government for not taking serious measures to support lower-income households in the country. A recent study by polling firm CV showed that the energy crisis is currently the number one concern of Germans, polling at 68%, followed by inflation at 64% and the war at 55%. Germany's top economic institute said the country would expand by 1.4% this year, contract by 0.4% in 2023, and grow by 1.9% in 2024. But they also warned the economy could shrink by 7.9% next year in the event of an unusually cold winter and the introduction of gas rationing in industry. The institute said that based on the median of their model simulations, Germany will not run out of gas this year and next, though the supply situation would remain extremely tight. They said that this will mean a permanent loss of prosperity for Germany. According to top news magazine Der Spiegel's recent report, German families with two children and a net income of 3,000 euros per month are worried about social justice in the country, as citizens must pay 1,000 euros more a month for gas and electricity and purchase prices of 1 million euros for a two-bedroom apartment. The report revealed that during the second quarter of this year, real wages fell by 4.4%. The Spark 7 Brand Savings Bank Association estimates that 60% of households in Germany soon will no longer be able to put money aside. In recent weeks, thousands have taken to the streets in protest in the cities of Leipzig, Magdeburg, and Pforzheim, and it's possible this is only the beginning. Politicians are warning of the possibility of a hot autumn, some of a winter of rage, referring to possible protest and unrest. Also, protesters marched on Saturday, October 1st, against soaring inflation and the rising cost of living in Western Germany. Gathering in the city center of Cologne, hundreds of protesters chanted, "Enough is enough, prices have to fall." Protesting against rising inflation, especially in energy prices, demonstrators called on the authorities tackle to this issue and take measure. Protesters emphasized that tens of thousands of people were driven into poverty due to rising prices, and that many could not pay their gas and electricity bills, while many opportunists, especially energy companies, are taking advantage of this situation.
From our imams, the ninth imam is the first, whose imamate began at a very young age, about 8 or 9.
As-salamu alayka ya Abu Jafar, Muhammad ibn Ali, al-Barakat.
Peace be upon you, O Abu Jafar, Muhammad, the son of Ali, the righteous, the pious.
This is Dialogue, a program on the famous conversations of Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'm your host Mahdi, and we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and he was the ninth divinely appointed imam among the household of the Holy Prophet. He was the testamentary trustee and the ninth successor to the Holy Prophet Muhammad. He was also the testamentary trustee and the only successor of the eighth divinely appointed imam, Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Ridha alayhi salam. Scholars, jurisprudents, narrators of traditions, and learners of wisdom and sciences came to Imam al-Jawad to drink from the pure fountain of his sciences and cultures. Jurisprudents have reported much from Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam concerning the various verdicts of the Islamic Sharia, worships, mu'amalat, the different business dealings, and other branches of jurisprudence, and all have been recorded in the encyclopedias of jurisprudence and hadith.
Parts of Ziyarah texts of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. Peace be upon you, O shining lights. Peace be upon you, O rising full moon. Peace be upon you, O pure one from among the pure ones. Peace be upon you, O immaculate from among the immaculate ones. Peace be upon you, O pleased and pure. Peace be upon you, O Aba Ja'far, Muhammad, the son of Ali, the righteous, the pious, the faithful leader, and Allah's mercy and blessings be upon you.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's great to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we're talking about the dialogues of the ninth divinely appointed Imam, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. In one such dialogue, we find that Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam was asked about the names and the attributes of Allah. Some philosophers and theologians had gathered around and had asked the following question from the esteemed Imam. They asked, "Tell us about the exalted Lord. He has names and attributes in his book, the Quran. Are these names and attributes equal to Allah?" Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam replied, "If you say that the names and attributes are a divisible thing that separates and or unites, then it is not possible to say that Allah is united, nor is he many or few, but rather Allah is the God in his essence, and whatever other than the one is indivisible, and Allah is the one that is indivisible, and whatever other than the one is divisible, and Allah is the one that is indivisible. Allah is not thought to be many or few, much or little. Every divisible thing is thought to be many or few, and is a creature that has a creator. You're saying that Allah has power over all things means that nothing at all fails Allah. Allah is not said to be unable, but all other than Allah are unable. And also you're saying that Allah is aware means that you deny ignorance from Allah and ascribe ignorance to all other than Allah. And if Allah annihilates things, he annihilates graphs and spellings. He does not end and still exists who has still been aware." In this beautiful dialogue and this description of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam regarding Tawheed and Islamic monotheism, we truly begin to fathom the great amount of knowledge and wisdom and depth that Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam has. The depth is so profound that sometimes, despite reading or listening to the statements of the divinely appointed imams, we are still left amazed and bewildered, for we truly do not understand the depths of what is being said. But we do understand that Imam Al-Jawad alayhi salam has taught us that according to Tawheed and Islamic monotheism, Allah is indivisible. Allah is the all-powerful. Allah is the all-aware. And all negative attributes and qualities are far away from Allah. And it is Allah who is the one and only God. This is Dialogue, Imam Al-Jawad alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
From our imams, the ninth imam is the first, whose imamat began at a very young age, about 8 or 9 years old. Basically, look at the special wisdom that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given to our ninth imam. What is zinat? Beauty. But let us go to the hadith of the imam, where imam talks about a zinat in a very different level. Al-afaf. Zinatul Faqr. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, you know, people go through different phases in life. People are tested in different ways. And one of the situations that many people would face is poverty, faqr. But even in being poor, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, look for the beauty in poverty. And what is that? Al-afaf. Al-afaf basically can be translated as contentment. Contentment is the beauty for poverty. And if you look at this concept, you will see that, you know, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, even if he restrains the circumstances of a person on a financial economic level, that is also a way of test and trial for that person. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala would like to see, is there afaf there or not? And what is afaf? It means to live within our own means and not to give in to the desires so that we will be tempted to go and seek the means which are haram. And this is something, you know, praised by the Imam where he says, Al-afaf zinatul faqr. If a person is faqir, he is in need, but he is able to content himself, you know, live within the means of his resources and not do things which are haram, then that is itself a zenith for him.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The Mar-a-Lago resort and its owner, former U.S. President Donald Trump, have become one of the biggest concerns of the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, CIA, with FBI agents raiding the Trump resort in Florida, known as Mar-a-Lago, to discover and seize confidential documents that Trump took with him after leaving the White House. This home and its owner became one of the biggest challenges and security concerns for the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency. The 114-room house is currently the focus of a U.S. Justice Department's investigation into Trump's illegal seizure of presidential documents. Experts believe that the stealing and archiving confidential and national information of the U.S. government by Trump can be seen as an obstacle for him being approved as a candidate in the next U.S. presidential election and even create complex legal problems and challenges for him. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at some world press and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Reuters news agency explains more about this big scandal in U.S. intelligence community. It says, some security experts warn the seizure of classified U.S. government documents from Donald Trump's sprawling Mar-a-Lago retreat spotlights the ongoing national security concerns presented by the former president and the home he dubbed the Winter White House. A search warrant shows Trump is under federal investigation for possible violations of the Espionage Act, which makes it unlawful to spy for another country to mishandle U.S. defense information, including sharing it with people not authorized to receive it. Former DOJ official Mary McCord said the Justice Department's search warrant raises concerns about national security. McCord said clearly they thought it was very serious to get these materials back into secured space, adding even just retention of highly classified documents in improper storage, particularly given Mar-a-Lago the foreign visitors there and others who might have connections with foreign governments and foreign agents, creates a significant national security threat. Trump, in a statement on his social media platform, claimed the records were all declassified and placed in secure storage. However, McCord said she saw no plausible argument that he had made a conscious decision about each one of these to declassify them before he left. She said after leaving office, he did not have the power to declassify information. Bloomberg News reported U.S. federal prosecutors are likely to wait until after the November election to announce any charges against Donald Trump if they determine he broke laws. The unprecedented prospect of bringing charges against a former U.S. president is creating intense scrutiny of the Justice Department in the aftermath of its search of his home at Mar-a-Lago. A separate DOJ probe is focused on his effort to overturn the 2020 election, which he lost to President Joe Biden. Under longstanding department policy, prosecutors are barred from taking investigative steps or filing charges for the purpose of affecting an election or helping a candidate or party, traditionally 60 days before an election. This year, that would be by September 15th, which makes it unlikely anything would be announced until after November 8th. The FBI executed a search warrant on Trump's home on August 8th when agents removed 20 boxes of material containing 11 sets of classified material. Announcing charges against Trump prior to the election likely would be seen as a political ploy by his supporters to damage him and his endorsed candidates and could fuel unrest in the country. For example, South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham recently warned during an interview on Fox News, "There literally will be riots in the street if Trump is indicted for mishandling classified information." Trump immediately posted the clip to his social media site. The British daily The Guardian in an article sheds more light on the issue, saying on August 8, when dozens of FBI agents fanned through Mar-a-Lago bearing a search warrant issued by a federal judge, Trump lashed out. He said, "These are dark times for our nation," describing the legally authorized search as a raid and portraying it as a blatantly political attack akin to one of those broken third world countries. Over the past 4 weeks, a cascade of information has been released that tells the other side of the story. It transpires that the unprecedented nature of the FBI search was posited on even more unprecedented behavior of the 45th president of the United States. Trump has been archivally challenged to coin a phrase for many years. The roots of his refusal to abide by normal rules relating to documents stretch back at least to his refusal to disclose his own tax returns during the 2016 presidential campaign, a resistance to accepting public access to his personal papers that is the mirror image of his current claim that presidential records from his time in the White House belong to him. Ruth Ben Gitt, a New York University history professor who is author of Strong Men, Mussolini to the Present, and publisher of the Lucid newsletter about threats to democracy, says this blaring of public and private is central to his autocratic style of leadership. Ben Gitt said, "For Trump, records are not just documents. They are a measure of control, leverage over enemies and over his inner circle. This kind of leader doesn't recognize the division between public and private. They have a propriety mode of exercising power in which everything is theirs." By June 2018, such propriety behavior was expressing itself in the White House. Politico reported that Trump was routinely tearing up official records rather than filing them for safekeeping in the National Archives, as he was legally obliged to do. The U.S. government says it is in possession of evidence showing that former President Donald Trump seemed to try to obstruct a probe into the discovery of classified documents at the former president's residence. The Justice Department says it had evidence that classified documents were deliberately concealed from the FBI when it tried to retrieve them in June from Trump's Florida estate, prompting an unprecedented search of his home. Prosecutors laid out their evidence of obstruction of justice, saying that Trump aides both falsely certified in June that the former president had retained all the government records he had stored in his home after leaving the White House in January 2021. It also revealed that Trump lawyers explicitly prohibited government personnel from opening or looking inside any of the boxes inside the storage room when FBI agents first traveled to his Palm Beach Mar-a-Lago resort in June to retrieve their records. After the FBI's raid on the Trump's resort, many supporters in some American cities gathered in front of FBI's headquarters to express their protest and demand the dissolution of this institution. Rudy Giuliani, the former mayor of New York and one of Trump's friends and lawyers, also said in an interview with the New York Post that if Trump wins the 2024 election, he will attack Joe Biden's house. While calling the FBI's attack on Trump's home in Florida political, he said if Trump wins the election, he will use the FBI to retaliate and attack Biden's house. Therefore, it can be said that considering the recent scandals in Trump's Mar-a-Lago house and the intelligence disorders inside the former U.S. administration, there is no clear future for Trump to become a candidate and win the 2024 elections. It can also be said that these events will have important effects on the incoming U.S. midterm elections.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we are going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble hadith which has been narrated from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. This hadith is about the benefits of brushing one's teeth. You know, the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wasallam would brush his teeth. This was one of the prophetic etiquettes and sunan. And there's a lot of hadith regarding it. You know, there's a famous hadith which says that the Prophet mentioned that if it were not for the fact that it would inconvenience my community, lawla an ashukka ala ummati, he says that I would have commanded them to brush their teeth before every prayer, every ritual prayer, ma'a kulli salatin. Right, so this is very highly recommended. And in this beautiful hadith of Imam Sadiq, the Imam alludes to a lot of the virtues and benefits of brushing one's teeth. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said there are 12 distinctive features to brushing one's teeth. It is a recommended prophetic practice. It's one of the sunan, it's one of the prophetic practices. Secondly, it purifies one's mouth. It cleans the mouth, it purifies the mouth. Third, it brightens one's eyesight. Maybe this is something that a lot of people don't realize. Fourth, it pleases the beneficent Lord. Allah is pleased with this sunnah, this action. Fifth, it widens the teeth. It widens the teeth. Sixth, it does away with wretchedness. It does away with wretchedness. Sixth, it strengthens one's gums. Strengthens one's gums. Next, it whets one's appetite for food. Then it takes away the phlegm in the body, which is harmful for the body, it takes it away. And this is interesting, the Imam says that it improves one's memory, وَيَزِيدُ فِي الْحِفْظِ, right? Brushing one's teeth, if one has bad memory, one of the things that can help us our memory increase is the brushing of the teeth. And then the Imam said that it multiplies one's rewards for good deeds. You know, if we do a good deed, if we brush our teeth before it or after it or during that time, you know, the rewards that we get from that act, like for example the salat, right, the rewards increase, they multiply. Finally, the Imam says that brushing the teeth gives pleasure to the angels. The angels become happy with this person. And in another tradition, Imam, you know, these benefits are not the only benefits of brushing one's teeth. These are mentioned as examples because we have another hadith from Imam Sadiq in which the Imam says that you must brush your teeth for it removes the temptations of your heart. Right? And, you know, Imam Ridha also said brushing one's teeth brightens the eyesight, increases hair growth, and removes the tendency for frequent weeping. Perhaps indication of the fact that brushing one's teeth keeps one's happy, gets rid of depression. Right? Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the etiquettes and virtues and benefits of brushing one's teeth in the words of Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
the spotlight.